sports, entertainment, and Maine's best guest list. On The Pulse, AM 620 WZON, WZONThePulse.com, and the WZON app. This is Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Why, hello there and a good Sunday morning to you on this fourth day of February. Welcome in. It's the best of Downtown. Brought to you by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. Rich Kimball, Kerry Haskell with you for the next hour, looking back at some of our favorite recent conversations. We'll talk movies with Ty Burr, the film critic of the Boston Globe. Talk television with our friend, actor and author Stephen Tobolowsky. The new season of One Day at a Time getting rave reviews and Emmy buzz. And I believe there's a game. Is that right, Kerry? Some kind of a game going on later today?
Rugby, soccer, no. Football.
It's not a curling bun spiel. It's football, or as we call it, Kerry's chance to get out and smoke a cigar in the freezing cold. Yeah, Super Bowl Sunday, Super Bowl 52. And that's how we'll begin things this morning, by getting a preview as the Patriots try to add one more ring for Tom Brady. Voice of the team, Bob Soucy, joined us this week and gave us a look to Patriots and Eagles tonight. Bob, how's your week going?
It's been a week of spending a lot of time in a shopping mall waiting for player availabilities, press conferences, and other events that are all really centralized at the Mall of America in Bloomington. So, definitely looking forward to the game. But and also, I will say this, the fans are starting to flood in now. This is probably the busiest day of the week by far in terms of crowd size and getting a sense that there's a lot of excitement here. You see people wearing their respective team gear, more celebrities, so-called celebrities, and others who are true celebrities coming in and making their way around Radio Row and such. But it's nonetheless exciting, obviously.
Now, we've been asking people throughout the week what they've been taking advantage of by being in this unique position in the Mall of America. Shake Shack seems to be the favorite from a lot of our guests. What about you?
Well, I can't say that I've actually had a Shake Shack. I put on a few pounds before we left, so I said, you know what? You got to go low-cal, low-carb on this trip, which is hard to do, as you know, in a food court at a shopping mall. I think the Shake Shack is probably a favorite choice because it's certainly conveniently located to at least many of the people that I know, very close to the 98.5, the sports hub, our flagship station's location, in a very congested Radio Row area. It's really not a Radio Row. It's more like a radio mosh pit in the center of the food court at the Mall of America. But I can't say that I've wandered into a few of the local stores, couple of Minnesota-themed stores. What I miss, though, is being in the city, and hopefully I'm going to get a chance to do that and wander into Minneapolis tomorrow and Saturday and just get a feel for the real flavor of the area as opposed to walking the mall. And I will say there's a Chick-fil-A. I'm looking at a Chick-fil-A right now, so maybe I'll wander up there in a few moments.
Now, I have to ask you about this. Is this true? I was thinking back a little bit, and I believe I'm right, that you have been on the call, everybody knows about last year, but for the two greatest comebacks in Super Bowl history.
Yeah, I've been so fortunate just to have a chance to call one Super Bowl, let alone to call two, and now given the opportunity to broadcast the third. And the Patriots win over the Seahawks, was in my second season with the Pats, and last year, we found ourselves in an even graver set of circumstances relative to football, with the Patriots down 28-3. And, what I said was the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history. I think at that point, it registered with me that, wait a minute, haven't we done this before? But it is amazing. It is, I get a thrill out of calling preseason games. And to say that I've had a chance to call two Super Bowls, and again, two of the more historic and more captivating Super Bowls in games history. I consider it not only the largest sporting event in the United States, but next to the World Cup and the Olympics, it's the biggest event in the world and in sports. And to think that my voice was heard again, on the soundtrack of a couple of them, Patriot fans, Patriot listeners, it's very, very humbling. Very humbling.
This year, the theme is not done, and that certainly speaks to the business-like attitude. Have you encountered any team, any group of people, Bob, either in pro sports or in college sports, that has been better than this Patriots group at tuning out distractions?
Well, I have to say that I spent 16 years at the Naval Academy, and being around young men and women, and especially the football, basketball teams that I covered, and in particular, the football team, they do such a tremendous job of living in the moment because of all the demands they have. If you try to look at everything with a big picture, panoramic view, you'll be overwhelmed. But they are able to process things and compartmentalize and take care of all the different balls that might be up in the air and focus on the one they need to catch first. And I think that maybe some of that, certainly influenced Bill Belichick growing up around that environment in terms of the way he's developed his organization through the years and instilled team concepts along with that ability that doesn't exist, it seems to me, from the outside with very many organizations where you can avoid distractions and compartmentalize. Even in the case of the Patriots, just think of Deflategate. And other things that they've experienced, the drama of the late season, questions about the future of the organization and Tom Brady and Jimmy Garoppolo that existed this year, and they don't slow down. They just keep going.
Well, let's talk about the game itself come Sunday night as Philadelphia's offense comes out on the field. Obviously, Nick Foles has played very well in key situations, but I have to think the name of the game for the Pats is stop the run. And so who has got to play well on the defensive side for New England?
Well, I really believe that the problem with Philadelphia is it's hard to prioritize what part of the offense you have to stop and who you want to take away first and foremost. And I think Nick Foles has been brilliant in a game and a half in the playoffs and overall outstanding for the Eagles when he's been the starting quarterback. A lot of people this year, of course, after Wentz went down, pointed to the Raiders game for Foles and as well a very, very brief performance against Dallas that I throw away in the regular season finale. But when he was given the chance to take the reins of the quarterback position earlier in his career, he had a season in which he made the right decision for 27 touchdown passes and the wrong decision, we presume, for only two interceptions in a single year. Best rate in NFL history until Tom Brady broke it last year. And he's a quarterback who's played in three postseason games and had 100 rating plus in all three of those games. To me, what makes Philadelphia so difficult is that the Foles can do all the things. He's not as mobile as Carson Wentz, but he can do all the things that they need to do to pose the same kind of problems that Doug Peterson's offense in Kansas City created for the Patriots defensively. And, of course, Andy Reid did earlier this year with Peterson coming from the Andy Reid tree. When you think about that season opener, there's misdirection, a bunch formations. There are multiple targets. There's a great tight end in Zach Ertz, but there's a pretty good player that you don't want to fall asleep on in Trey Burton, who when Ertz was hurt against the Rams, Burton caught two touchdown passes. And then there's an old pro at tight end as well in Brent Celek. And he may only make one catch, but it could be a backbreaker. You mentioned the running back position, Blunt and Ajayi. And then there's Corey Clement, who's kind of a James White type, who, interestingly enough, followed White at Wisconsin. And then there are the receivers, Torrey Smith and Nelson Aguilar, who can get downfield and make plays. So I think that the Patriots really have their work cut out for them. And I just think about what Kansas City has done against the Pats in recent years. Peterson's going to try to do the same thing. They're multiple enough, and they're a kind of team that's hard to pinpoint tendencies and identify people you want to take away.
We're talking with Bob Soucy, voice of the Patriots here on Downtown. Offensively, Tom Brady will be Tom Brady. It sounds like Gronk will be Gronk. But who is somebody who could become this year's James White?
Well, that's a question that I was asked the other day, and I thought about it in a split second when the question was posed. And I've given it more consideration, and I'm going to stick with the same answer. Yeah, I think Deion Lewis, James White, you mentioned those two. James, and of course, Deion has been a star for this team late in the regular season and certainly was against the Tennessee Titans in the divisional round. If Rex Burkhead, for example, gets out there for the usual allotment of snaps for him. He didn't play much against Jacksonville. He was banged up of late. You know, he's another guy that I would throw in that mix because I think how the Patriots running backs do in the passing game against the Eagles linebackers in particular will help dictate, you know, how this game goes. They didn't get any yards after the catch with the running backs against Jacksonville. They usually get more production, obviously. I would expect them to get more production against Philly because the ball's going to have to come out of Brady's hand quickly against that front four of the Eagles. It's a pass rush for Philadelphia. It's deep. They've got, you know, seven players with 400-plus snaps this year. It's very talented. It's a team that certainly doesn't have to blitz to get pressure on the quarterback. And when I look at a couple of other situations in this game that might arise, I think, you know, Brandon Cooks, Chris Hogan are guys that might loom large for this game. If they can capitalize on what was a problem for Philadelphia earlier this season, times a little over-aggressiveness on the corners and biting on the double moves. And Hogan, it's hard to call him, you know, a dark horse or someone that, you know, we're not thinking of as a big play guy because he was instrumental last year's postseason against Pittsburgh in the AFC Championship, and he had a very good second half against Atlanta and made really the catch of the night. I shouldn't say that because Julian made the catch of the night, but he was involved in one of the most important plays of the night when it was 3rd and 10 from New England's nine, and he caught the comeback route along the sideline for Brady for the first down on the game-tying drive. So I think Hogan, Burkhead, guys who've added offensively for the Patriots are certainly people to keep an eye on. And, you know, they haven't targeted Dwayne Allen yet in this postseason. And, you know, we'll see what's in store because you're right. There are guys that are unsung players who traditionally in the postseason and especially in the Super Bowl, you know, have their moment.
Bob, who do you think has the edge if there is one when it comes to special teams?
Rich, that's another fascinating thing about this matchup. I don't know if there is an edge. Now, Philadelphia turned a game around against the Patriots in 2015 with a punt return for a touchdown by Darren Sproles and a punt block for a touchdown that was produced on the rush of Chris Maragos, one of the best special teamers in the league. Both Sproles and Maragos have been lost for most of the year for Philadelphia and aren't going to play on Sunday, and yet the Philly special teams unit has been exceptional. They blocked 5 kicks this year. They blocked 3 in a single game against the Giants. Now, they may not have the game breaker as a return man, but they're certainly very solid in special teams in all the phases. They've got a terrific place kicker. Interestingly, a guy who was mentored by Stephen Gostkowski. He broke Gostkowski's records at Memphis. They worked out together. Last year, when Gostkowski went to the Super Bowl, he got a text from Jake Elliott. Now they're going to be kicking on opposite sides in this Super Bowl, and he had a 61-yarder at the buzzer to beat the Giants early this season. Hunter Donnie Jones, one of the best in the league for a long, long time. And again, it's a team that has made plays against the Patriots, as we know, and certainly everybody else in the NFL as a special teams group. And you know, breakdowns in kicking games so often turn a game around, as they did in 2015 when Philadelphia came to Foxborough. And it's the team that blinks first in that facet of play that might ultimately decide this game.
That's Bob Soucy, voice of the Patriots here, Best of Downtown, your Sunday morning Z62 Retro Radio. When we come back, we'll talk movies. Film critic of the Boston Globe, Ty Burr, is next.
At Quirk Motor City, you get a huge selection of quality pre-owned vehicles priced to fit any budget. Plus, the Quirk Motor City pre-owned difference, with a limited warranty that's 3 times longer than the average dealer's pre-owned warranty. Free main state inspections for the life of the vehicle. A free Carfax vehicle history report. And Quirk Motor City's certified pre-owned 118-point inspection. It's your quality pre-owned car. Find it at Quirk Motor City in Bangor, Belfast, Augusta, and Portland. View our pre-owned inventory online at quirkauto.com.
It may not be prime biking season, but it's always a good time to make sure your cycle is in great shape. And there's only one place to go to do that. Slipping Gears Cycling, 753 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. Bangor's only full-time cycling sales and service experts. They offer outstanding service and a huge stock. Make sure you like them on Facebook to get updates, shop in person or online at slippinggears.com.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
It's not always whether you win or lose, but who you've got on your team. The Emily Ellis team at Next Home Experience wants you to enjoy the best team chemistry in real estate. If you're looking to buy, sell, rent, or build in the Bangor area, make Emily Ellis's All-Star Squad your go-to team. Responsive and experienced, the Emily Ellis team will make your real estate quest as smooth as possible. Linda, Jen, Callie, and Emily will listen and prepare your game plan. The Emily Ellis team at 57 Washington Street in Bangor, shooting for your goals.
Hi, this is Mike Toole. My company is ClearPoint Financial. We're an independent retirement plan advisory firm located right here in Bangor, Maine. At ClearPoint Financial, we provide guidance-based, comprehensive retirement plan solutions to companies that are concerned about their employees' retirement income security. We focus on plan participants. We help them strive to achieve retirement income security. We provide ongoing engagement, education, investment advice, and service that exceeds expectation. For more details on our financial wellness programs, call me today at 899-2552. ClearPoint Financial, the official financial advisor of the Maine Black Bears.
Penobscot Theater presents...
My name is Albert Sodi, and have I got a buck story for you.
Come up to camp for a deer hunting tall tale by actor Jeff Daniels.
Takes place in the Sodi Deer Camp, just north of Escanaba, Michigan. That's in the Upper Peninsula, for those of you that don't know nothing.
Escanaba in the Moonlight, February 1st through the 18th at Bangor's Historic Opera House.
There's a couple of things that need to be explained. First is, in the UP, we don't explain things.
Tickets at 942-3333 and PenobscotTheater.org.
But that's all in the movies. It won't happen to you and I.
Sunday morning, Best of Downtown. Guests of the show coming your way on the G&M Family Market phone line. They're on the corner of Route 1A, Route 46 in Holden. Open every day, 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. Let's talk movies. Film critic of the Boston Globe, Ty Bird, joined us after getting back from the Sundance Festival. Talked about some of the films he saw there and this year's Oscar nominations as well. 23 films in 5 days. Was that a good number? Was that a little
bit
much?
That's a pretty good number. 5.5 days, maybe like a little, two more on the flopping over into the six. But yeah, that's a pretty typical festival crunch for me.
Do you even remember all of them that you saw at this point?
I do. I take notes in the dark, but by like the fourth day, the notes are completely illegible. but I do remember most of them. There were some very, very good films there. There were no like big breakouts like Get Out last year, but there were the quality was high, and we'll be seeing a lot of those movies later this year.
And what were a couple that really stood out to you?
Oh, The Tale with Laura Dern. Which is about a woman coming to terms with her youthful abuse. There were a lot of really strong performances by young unknown actresses. I saw a movie called Madeline's Madeline, which was tremendous. Skate Kitchen, about young skateboarding girls. Let me think. There were also some really nice performances by men. There was Paul Rudd was in a movie called The Catcher Was a Spy, playing Mo Berg, the baseball player who was actually a spy during World War II for the OSS. There was a lot of interesting good stuff there.
So the one you posted about looked very interesting, The Miseducation of Cameron Post.
Oh, yeah. That's set in the 90s, starring Chloe Moretz as a gay teenager who's sent off to a Christian conversion camp. And it's, you know, it's got a dry sense of humor, but it's also quite serious about what was going on in those places.
And another impressive performance, it sounds like, coming up for people to see from Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Yeah. She's in this movie called Kindergarten Teacher that I really liked, playing this sort of middle-aged kindergarten teacher in Staten Island. Nobody sort of pays any attention to her. Her teenage kids don't pay attention to her. Her husband's sort of not paying attention to her. And she finds this kid who's a natural poet. He's 5 years old, but he just like it's like a Mozart of poetry, and she has to decide what she's going to do about it. And she makes some pretty foolish decisions, but it's a very gripping drama. It's another sort of, you know, feather in the cap for Maggie Gyllenhaal, who I think is coming up with the kinds of roles that people don't see anymore. Between this and The Deuce, she's sort of creating her own career path, which I think is pretty interesting.
And it sounds like you very much enjoyed the documentary on Jane Fonda.
Yeah, I did. It's over 2 hours, but talk about a life. You know, love her or hate her. You know, it's called Jane Fonda in Five Acts, and each of those acts, when you think, you know, back to it, is pretty amazing. It's got a lot of fascinating stuff going on, and she's front and center in it, and it is a portrait of an amazing career, a colossal vanity, a smart woman, and who sort of defined herself through men her entire life until recently, and she talks pretty frankly about that, and about many things in her career, including her notable regrets, including Hanoi. So yeah, that's going to be, I think, on HBO in a couple of months. But I was interested in the subject, so I checked it out anyway.
We're talking with Ty Burr here on Downtown. Well, this week the Academy Award nominations came out, and were you surprised at Best Picture nominees? Were there any omissions or additions to the list that caught you by surprise?
I mean, there's a good strong bunch of movies. I mean, there were no huge surprises. I was hoping in the Best Picture category, a little movie like The Florida Project might sneak in there, or Dee Reese's Mudbound. I know a lot of people love The Big Sick, Kumail Nanjiani's movie. Real wonderful little crowd pleaser. I had a sneaking feeling that, you know, it was going to get a screenplay nomination, which it did, but wasn't going to get into the Best Picture ranks. I think where you find the surprises is further down in the list than the actors and directors and other areas.
Yeah, glad to see. And I guess I wasn't surprised after the well-publicized snub at the Golden Globes, but it was good to see Greta Gerwig get the nomination, and I was surprised to see Jordan Peele get a much-deserved nomination.
I agree. You know, I wasn't that surprised to see Peele get it. I know that he's been talked about a lot in the various critics awards that come out at the end of the year, and I also really do think we're beginning to see the attempt to broaden and youthify and diversify the Academy's voting membership. I think that's starting to pay off. I think because the people running the Academy have done a real push in the last 2 years to bring in younger and more diverse members, because its arteries have been pretty hard over the last 10 years, and I think you're starting to see that show up in the results. Possibly of last year's win for Moonlight, which caught a lot of people off guard, including Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway, when they announced the win on TV. But also, I think, in some of the nominations, including for Gerwig and Jordan Peele and Daniel Kaluuya, the star of Get Out. He was nominated for Best Actor.
Were you of the belief that perhaps the fallout of the James Franco win at the Golden Globes impacted the nomination process? Because I think that occurred with just a few days left in the process for the Oscars.
I do. I do think that was a factor. I mean, it's anybody's guess, but just the timing was such that some pretty nasty stories came out about him just as people were making out their nomination ballots. So, you know, he got nominated for screenplay, for adapted screenplay, but I think in this particular climate, and these stories are not particularly new. There have been stories bubbling up around about him for quite some time, but they're now getting focused, and I don't think anybody felt comfortable throwing prize bling at him in this particular climate.
Do you think the backlash is at all justified for Three Billboards?
That's a show in itself. Did you read Wesley Morris's piece in the New York Times last week?
Yes, I did. It was great.
Very smart take on it. I like the movie. I don't love the movie. I don't particularly buy Sam. Spoiler alert! Put your fingers in your ears if you haven't seen the movie. Sam Rockwell's character has a change of heart. Let's just put it that way. Toward the end of the movie, that didn't really wash for me. I can understand why people of color look at this movie and go, and I can also understand why some people look at it and think it's a really, you know, trenchant statement on our incredibly divided times in America. I think Martin McDonagh's a really great writer. I love his plays. I like some of his earlier movies. I'm not convinced he understands the American South, or the American Midwest, the American heartland, I should say, as well as he thinks he does. On the other hand, you've got really great performances by Frances McDormand and Woody Harrelson, who just keeps getting better. you know, with every movie and with age, and Rockwell, and, you know, everybody in it pretty much is doing great work. So it's a mixed bag. I don't think it doesn't belong here, but I think there's a good conversation to be had about it. It's one of those movies that, to me, looks kind of sterling on the surface, but the deeper you dig into it, the more it doesn't quite add up.
The Post got nothing at the Golden Globes and got a few Oscar nominations. Does that movie suffer somehow from being a very traditional film?
I think you have a point there, and I also think that, and it, you know, I'm just spitballing here. It may be that the push to bring younger members and more diverse members into the Academy has a opposite effect on some of the, you know, the old lions of Hollywood and the Academy. Spielberg did not get nominated. I find that interesting. I like the movie. I don't think it's its best work, but I think it's pretty good. You know, Streep gets nominated for combing her hair, for hailing a taxi. It's her 21st nomination. Somebody joked online that her nominations are now legal to drink everywhere. But, you know, The Post is a good movie. It's a good, solid movie. It's timely, certainly enough, but in a weird way, it's also old-fashioned, and as you pointed out. And I think there are other movies coming out this year that are doing fresher, more interesting things, and that's kind of where the awards are going.
Ty, as you look at this crop of Best Picture nominees, there are some that are in that moment and sort of capture this place and where we are in time, but which movies will stand up? What are the ones that you think might be considered classics if we look back in a decade or two?
That's an interesting question. Boy, they're all pretty good. The Shape of Water, I think, will age pretty well. It's so unique that it kind of falls outside its time. I think Three Billboards will probably not age particularly well. The Post will look good and old-fashioned no matter when you watch it. Get Out, I think, is going to stand the test of time. It's sort of a cultural icon at this point. I mean, there's more meaning that accrues to it just beyond is it a good movie or not. Dunkirk, I think, is going to be remembered as a good, solid war movie with an unusual structure. Phantom Thread, honestly, this is my particular favorite movie of the year because I think I've seen it more than twice now. I've seen it three times, and it just gets richer, and it actually gets funnier every time you see it. And there was Paul Thomas Anderson was being interviewed, and somebody asked him, when are you going to make a comedy? And he says, I just did. but it's a very dry, kind of dark comedy with, Daniel Day-Lewis and Vicky Krebs just doing amazing work. I think a lot of people are sort of disturbed by it. It's kind of hard to read. I have a feeling that it's going to look better in 10 years and even better than that in 20 years. And that's the one I would put my stake on as just being a small classic of interestingly twisted human behavior, a human love.
We're talking with Ty Burr, film critic of the Boston Globe, author of a wonderful book about celebrity in America as well. And we're seeing some of the celebrities that have been up there in the upper echelon, the Tom Hanks of the world and others, sort of making way, it seems, to this new generation. And when you see younger people like Timothy Chalamet and others getting nominations, it does appear that we're going through a bit of a changing of the guard.
It does. On the other hand, I think all of the supporting actress nominees are over 40. So what does that tell you? and a number of the Best Actress nominees as well. But you're right, we're seeing some real fresh blood. You know, in the actor category, we're seeing Chalamet, Daniel Kaluuya, and on the other hand, we're seeing, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis and Denzel Washington, who are, you know, standard bearers for that category. In the actress, we're seeing Saoirse Ronan and Margot Robbie. But we're also seeing Frances McDormand and Meryl Streep and Sally Hawkins, who's been nominated before. And in the supporting actor category, you've got Armie Hammer was not nominated. Actually, you've got I believe Christopher Plummer is the oldest nominee in that category ever. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Did he pass Gloria Stewart for that honor? Was that her?
I think in the supporting actor category. Yeah. I think he's... Where it's also interesting is where you're seeing some fresh blood in the craft category. So, for instance, Mudbound cinematographer, who is the first woman to be nominated
right.
for cinematography in the entire history of the Academy. Johnny Greenwood, who is one of the key players in the rock band Radiohead, but has been making really interesting soundtracks, music scores for movies, mostly for Paul Thomas Anderson, for some time now. And it's always been sort of cut out of the Oscars for a variety of reasons. And he's not part of the scoring in-group, but he got a nomination. And they should, because it's a really good score. So I think it's not just the sort of above-the-title contributors that are beginning to be represented in different ways, but it's the people behind the camera, which I think is terrific.
Well, I had a listener want to know if while you were at Sundance, you saw the film Believer about Dan Reynolds of Imagine Dragons.
I did not. There are 200 movies or so, and I can only see, one-tenth of them. And I heard good things about it. I know I talked to people who saw it, but the frustration of going to a major film festival like that is that you're always missing the thing that people seem to be talking about. And that's frustrating. And sometimes you put the checkers on the squares right, and you just see a lot of really good things. And sometimes you are just always standing behind the door. But no, I did not see that film. But it sounded really interesting. And I believe, I don't know if it's got a distributor or whether it's coming out later in the year. But a lot of the films playing at Sundance do find distribution.
What's coming up that you're excited about? So I know, I think it was around Oscar time last year that Get Out was released, which is pretty unusual. So what's coming up that you're anxious to get a look at?
I'm always the worst person to ask about that because I'm always sort of focused on what's coming out this week, and I'm not really focused on what's coming out the rest of the year. I do know that I'm going to be seeing, I'm not necessarily a superhero movie guy, but the Black Panther movie sounds really interesting to me. It's the Marvel movie, and they've sort of laid the basis for it in previous films. But it's Ryan Coogler, who did Fruitvale Station and Creed, is directing. And it's got Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther. And he's played Jackie Robinson. He's played Thurgood Marshall. He's played James Brown. He's sort of getting these sort of iconic roles. It's got Lupita Nyong'o in it. It just sounds really interesting. It has Daniel Kaluuya in it as well. And Angela Bassett and Forrest Whitaker, this incredibly heavy-hitting cast. So I am looking forward to that, and that's opening in February. And February is usually, the cruelest of months in terms of movies. But that one's hopefully going to, maybe they're going for the Get Out, to see if lightning will strike twice, because I think Get Out opened pretty early in the year as well.
We're around the same vintage, and I want to relax sometimes on a weekend. I love nothing better than finding an old black and white film that I haven't seen in a while on TV. What's a comfort food kind of movie for you? One that if you see it on, you can't help but sit down and watch.
Oh man, I'm a movie critic and I love movies, so I will stop in my tracks for a lot of stuff. But you're right. I mean, if I see a screwball comedy with Cary Grant in it, I have to sit down and watch. If I see anything by Howard Hawks, if I see one of the James Stewart westerns that he made with Anthony Mann after World War II, Bend of the River, Winchester 73, those are just, they're great, great, tough, mature movies. If I see a Gene Kelly musical, that's it, I'm done for the evening. The nice thing about the era we're living in terms of being able to stream all of these movies and get at more movies than we ever have before, you can sign up for like a specialized streaming outfit like Filmstruck. Do you know about Filmstruck?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
It's $99 a year, but you get the entire Criterion collection. You get all the great war horses of foreign film classics, all the Fellinis, all the Kurosawas. You get new stuff. You get old stuff. You get, it's for a committed film junkie, there is so much there. I could just, if I could take that streaming site to a desert island, I'd be happy.
Ty Burr, the film critic of the Boston Globe, here on the Best of Downtown for your Sunday morning. When we return, our friend Stephen Tobolowsky discusses season 2 of One Day at a Time, the terrific Netflix series. It's the best of Downtown on Z62 Retro Radio.
When it comes to your health, early detection is the best protection. That's why the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center provides 3D mammography to offer better answers and greater peace of mind, identifying problem areas that a standard mammogram might miss. It provides precise images for all women, including those with dense breast tissue. Call 907-1682 to schedule your 3D mammogram at the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center. 3D, providing peace of mind for you, your family, and your loved ones.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
At this busy time of year, there's nothing better than a place that offers you one-stop shopping. That place is G&M Family Market on the corner of Route 1A and Route 46 in Holden. Fresh produce delivered daily, a great selection of meats and seafood, beer and wine, of course a Dunkin' Donuts and an Amato's right on site. Stop into G&M Family Market every day of the week from 6 in the morning till 9 o'clock at night, and if they don't have what you're looking for, they'll make every effort to get it next time. G&M Family Market, Route 1A and Route 46 in Holden.
There's only one way Hartley's Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Newport does business. The right way. Owned and operated for over 60 years by the Hartley family, Hartley's offers the same or even better prices and discounts on vehicles as those offered at mega dealerships. And along with that comes their renowned small dealer service and exceptional attitude toward you, their customers. Hartley's values your business and your trust. You're never pushed, never pressured. No one will chase you around the lot, but no one will ignore you either. Hartley's wants you to feel comfortable at their dealership. So feel free to look around, and Hartley's professional sales staff will always be there when you need help. You'll like the place, you'll like the people, and you'll like the way they do business. The right way. The folks at Hartley's wouldn't do it any other way. Always remember, if you're out there looking around, the best deals aren't in the city, they're in the country. Hartley's Country, at the Triangle in Newport. You'll always be treated the right way at Hartley's.
Go Blue!
Sir, you're here for the cheerleading tryouts?
Yeah, for the class of 82. Gotta show my school spirit.
I know a better way. The UMaine Alumni Signature Rewards Visa Card from University Credit Union. Low rates, no annual fees, and it earns reward points for travel, merchandise, or cash back.
Woo, sounds easier than a backflip.
Apply online today at UMaineAlumniCard.com.
Federally insured by NCUA. Terms and conditions apply, subject to credit approval.
It's game time at the Oriental Jade. Score 2 poo-poo platters, a big pork fried rice, and the Jade's new dragon tenders for just $25. Takeout and delivery from the Oriental Jade, Maine's authentic Asian dining experience next to Bangor Mall. How hungry are you? 2 poo-poo platters, a big pork fried rice, and the Jade's new dragon tenders for just $25. Takeout and delivery from the Oriental Jade. Begin your experience now at Oriental Jade.
Honey, what's all that barking in the neighborhood?
The dogs are saying something.
Let's listen closer.
You know, Green Acres Kennel Shop in Bangor is more than our home away from home. They're your pet food superstore. My owners have always trusted Green Acres Kennel Shop for the best price and selection. They carry a large variety of Nutrisource pet foods formulated with the best ingredients and made with integrity. Ooh, they even have a rewards program. I save my owners money by earning points for every purchase.
We interrupt this message to bring you the cats of the neighborhood.
Meow. It's not all about the dogs around here. Don't forget your feline friends. Green Acres Kennel Shop is my parents' pet food headquarters. They buy me the best brands of dry and canned choices.
Well, dear, the dogs and cats around here know best. Time to make Green Acres Kennel Shop our new pet food store.
Green Acres Kennel Shop, Union Street, Bangor. Online at greenacreskennel.com.
We love Green Acres Kennel Shop, our home away from home.
This is it.
Back here on the best of Downtown, Z62 Retro Radio. And Carrie, I don't know if it's fair to call the Netflix version of One Day at a Time a reboot, because it really is a complete retooling of the series. It takes the characters, it takes the apartment, it takes the theme song and gives it a Cuban twist with Gloria Estefan, but it's so much, and not to diss the old show, but it's so much more than a 70s sitcom.
Yeah, and the 70s show tried to be more than just a normal sitcom, so it has that spirit, I think, as well. But yeah, it's a completely different look at the show.
And it's a sitcom, as we talked about with Stephen Tobolowsky, that can leave you, in the course of one episode, laughing and crying and a whole lot in between. It really is a wonderful series, and Stephen joined us earlier this week to talk about it.
You know, we had the big, the premiere, and it's odd when you have a premiere for a TV show. I remember for Deadwood, we had a premiere at the Chinese Theater, where you go in with all the footprints and all that. And we did a premiere here at a very fancy Arclight Cinema out here in Los Angeles with the red carpet and all of the press. And they show two episodes of the program. And it was the first time I had seen the fully edited elements of One Day at a Time. And I was like unsuspecting most of the audience. I was laughing. I was crying. I was, Rich, when you look back over a career, I've been in tons of shows, and a few of them have been really, really good, and a couple of them have been really terrible. Most of them have been okay. But there's nothing like One Day at a Time. And the way it works on me as an audience, I could be laughing at some crazy, stupid joke one second, and then be in tears for legitimate reasons for another. I heard someone say that what TV sitcoms always kind of do is have these special episodes, like a very special Roseanne, or if One Day at a Time, every episode is a very special episode. I've never been able to see writers be able to craft really hilarious comedy with really heartbreaking moments in the same show, and almost in minute to minute, you never know what's going to happen. It's a phenomenal show.
Well, and it seems like every episode tackles multiple issues, but it feels so organic and just part of the lives of this wonderful extended family. It's not preachy at all, and it cuts to some really hard truths about not only the family, but America.
Yeah, well, you take the first episode, and the family, if you haven't seen One Day at a Time, is a Cuban-American family with Justina Mercado as the mother. Rita Moreno plays her mother, who's living in the house with them, and what a twosome that is. And then you have the two kids, very much like the original One Day at a Time. And the first episode kind of begins in a very funny way, but it ends up talking about racism, in a way. Which you figure, okay, I know that's a hot button issue now, and the fact with immigrants and all of that, it's a hot button issue. But I don't know about you, but I grew up in Oak Cliff, Dallas, Texas, and I'm Jewish. We had three Jewish families in Oak Cliff. There were more Nazis in Oak Cliff than there were Jews. And even though I'm watching this episode that has nothing to do with my life and seeing what happens to this little boy in the episode, it has everything to do with my life. And before I know it, I am with him. He is telling my story, even though he's not telling my story at all. And it's because what you say is the show isn't preachy. It's organic. It's just telling a good story. And each one of the episodes is funny and affecting. This isn't much of a spoiler. It's a teeny spoiler. But in one episode, Rita Moreno has taken over the entire garage by keeping all the things that she immigrated from Cuba with. Every piece of junk you could possibly imagine. And I'm sitting here watching the show, and I begin getting a little weepy because I'm looking at my shelf right beside me, and I have three rocks that I picked up off the street
in Illinois when I was in graduate school. And I held those rocks in my hand, and I thought, these rocks feel magical to me. I may not run across magical rocks ever again. I'm going to keep them. Now, I'm 66 years old. We're talking, I've kept these rocks over 40 years. They're sitting on my shelf here. But every time I look at them, I still think, you know, I may not run across a magical rock again. I better keep them. And of course, my wife is saying, Stephen, you know, maybe we could get rid of the rock. But we all have these items that are apparently worthless to everybody else, but mean the world to us. And again, one day at a time, told the story of my life, and I didn't expect it.
Yeah, that was something that I had picked up on, was the very special episode. They do what so many other shows can't quite do. They work that into sort of an everyday life feel, and it doesn't make it stand out, and that's what makes those episodes, this show, so good, I think.
Yeah, they have one episode this season. Justina, who's our lead, was a soldier in Afghanistan, and she's come back, and she has PTS, which used to be called PTSD, but they got rid of the D. But she's suffering from trauma from her time abroad and depression. And you would think, how is the sitcom going to show this? And they show it in a way that I've never seen a drama handle, in that our lead character basically is in bed almost the entire show in tears. And you would think, like, well, this isn't dramatic, but it's enormously dramatic, and it shows you the horror of what it is, of what real depression is and what our veterans have to go through. But then at the same time, you see her family and her loved ones rallying to help her and bring her out of it, which is very heroic, and it's a wonderful episode. It's remarkable what they do on that show and what they get away with.
We're talking with Stephen Tobolowsky. The new season two of One Day at a Time, available now on Netflix. And you mentioned Justina Mikado, Rita Moreno, the Alex and Emma, the actors who play the kids, are so good. They're so real. And your guest appearances, the actors who are in there, everybody is just so solid and strong in this. And it's really a great ensemble piece.
Oh, yeah. Todd Grinnell is Schneider. I take a look at the show and I go, like, okay, maybe this is why I kept the three rocks. Maybe it was for this magic, because this show, how many years did it take to create this show? You have Norman Lear at 95 years old is our executive producer, and he shows that he has not lost his touch. You have Mike Royce and Gloria Calderon Kellett as our showrunners, who have mastered the form of telling a story that's both hilarious and heartbreaking at the same time. You have Justina Mikado. Now, when this is a story that Norman told me, Justina was the first person who came in to read for this part. And if there are any people out there in Bangor and across the country, if you're an actor, you know, if you're the first person who goes in on an audition, you're not going to get it. Right? They have thousands of people lined up that are going to audition for this part, and they usually bring in somebody the first time in that they figure will get everything warmed up and everything rolling. Justina came in and did her thing from show one of season one, a monologue, and devastated the people in the room. And Norman goes, like, well, that's pretty good for starts. Let's let's see who else we have. And then they proceed to see another 200-300 women to play the leading role. And Mike and Gloria and Norman goes, let's get Justina back in here. And she was the first one in, and she got it. And it's this woman can do anything. She is the perfect engine for a show. She's hilarious. She's every moment is real and from the heart. And then you combine that with Rita Moreno. Give me a break. And I mean, you're dealing not only with an international icon, but somebody who can make, again, make you laugh and cry in a second. And she could still dance better than I can.
Well, and your character, Dr. Berkowitz, is such a fully developed character. And sometimes in traditional sitcoms, that might have been just comic relief. And it's so much more than that. This wonderful relationship you have with Rita's character. And it's so deep and it's so real.
It's odd because, again, it's one of the things you don't expect to see on a sitcom is that I play a doctor. I'm the employer of Justina here in America now that she's back. She's my nurse at the office. And everything bad has happened to me. My wife has left me. My daughters hate me. No one remembers my birthday. Everything happens bad to me, but I always try to see, even though I'm the sad clown. You know, I'm always heartbroken, but I always try to see the optimistic side. And Rita Moreno sings Happy Birthday to me on my birthday, a la Marilyn Monroe with President Kennedy. And I fall madly in love, and it becomes this story of how people long for love at every stage of their life. It's not about young romantic love. It is about Rita, who the love of her life, her husband Berto, has passed away. And I'm at this stage in my life where I've fallen madly in love with her. And it is a love story about people later in life that isn't necessarily driven by romance or having children or anything, but at the same time, it is not sexless. It is a romance that is waiting to blossom, waiting to happen in a very real way. And you don't have stories like that on a sitcom. You don't.
Yeah, that relationship between Leslie and Lydia, I don't want to give away, you know, too much of it for season two, but I was really pulling for those that platonic companion outings to become a little bit more between those characters. And it did lead in season two to one of my favorite scenes of the show so far with Rita and the other actress, Yvonne Cole. That scene in the bathroom between the two of them was just
hilarious.
Yeah.
And what was really remarkable when we filmed the show is that the scene, they just went ahead and did the scene in Spanish. They did the scene, you know, on TV, they do it in subtitles, but it's, I don't want to be a spoiler to it, but when we do the show live now, in front of the studio audience, like sitcoms and Days of Yore, we have so many Spanish language people who come to see the show because there are moments of Spanish in it. The screams of laughter during that scene, as those two women were going at it in Spanish, and I didn't understand a word of it, but I was laughing so hard I was crying watching them. And again, I don't want to be a spoiler as to what happens, but it is truly hilarious. And it's just amazing, the chemistry. Like, take Todd Grinnell, who plays Schneider, and you would think he would be like Schneider from the old show. How can you possibly top Schneider from the original? But in Todd is I don't know. He is you could say Schneider is the perpetual child. Schneider is a perpetual moron. Schneider is all heart. You could say all these things, but Todd has a way of holding so many scenes together with his humor and also with his nonsensical advice quite often. it's a chemistry that I've never really seen on shows.
I think
it's odd.
I think you hit the exact thing that ties his character to the old Schneider. It's all heart. Whatever he does, it's with the best of intentions to help or be part of the family.
And that's the need. The need is that he grew up without a real family. He grew up with a father who fooled around. He had several mothers, several stepmothers. And so he sees this Cuban family that's moved in as an opportunity to be part of a real family. Just as I, as Dr. Leslie Berkowitz, someone who my family has deserted me, I see the love of this family as something that has a gravity that brings me to this family as well. And it just shows you, man, love conquers all. And that's the primary lesson of this show.
And while there are connections to the original version of the show with the theme song, with the apartment, it stands on its own so well. But I love the little homages here and there, including when Elena decides to be Schneider's assistant and shows up wearing the same thing that Pat Harrington wore 40 years ago.
Hysterical. And did you see the promo that Netflix shot of the show One Day at a Time, where we copied shot for shot the original One Day at a Time promo?
I have not seen that yet, no.
It is, just Google it. It's on there. It is absolutely hilarious. So Todd is dressed up like the original Schneider. Justina is dressed up like Bonnie Franklin with a Bonnie Franklin wig. The kids are dressed up, the boy and girl are dressed up as the two girls, Mackenzie Phillips and Valerie. And since I'm not in the original show, I play guy who runs into the picture in the background. And it is shot for shot matches the original One Day at a Time opening. It's amazing.
Well, we will have to watch that. And I have seen a couple of critics already say this, and it would be hard to argue with it based on what I've seen of season one and a good chunk of season two. It's the best situation comedy on television right now.
It very well could be. It's amazing. The results are so good. I'm not going to do a spoiler, but I'll just say, like, show 13, the final show of season two. You're going to need a seatbelt.
And a box of tissues, I think, too, right?
Yeah, it's remarkable. It's remarkable.
Well, we're so happy for you to be a part of this wonderful ensemble. It's just a fantastic show. For anybody who hasn't seen it, get to Netflix and see season two. And if you haven't, get caught up on season one of One Day at a Time. I did want to ask you, too, while you're here, Stephen, since your visit to Bangor, you also did a couple of live readings, performances of your story, A Good Day at Auschwitz. How did that go, working with your friend Alan Mandel?
It was great. I never really do that story live because it's in the book of My Adventures with God, because it really involves my visiting and talking with this Auschwitz survivor. And I don't like to do the accent, you know, to play an old man and to play me, who is kind of an old man, but he was an older man and from Europe. And Alan Mandel is 90, and he was a brilliant, brilliant actor. And we did the show of the two stories, very touching. We had a full house, and it broke my heart. Norman Lear came. Norman came, and Todd came, and Justina came. And you know, I just put out this little flyer on the internet, and they came to support me during their time off. But it was beautiful, and it is such a great story and such a moving story. And I guess we're at this period in history where we go like, well, this is a story that we need to know now that that fits this period of history. But I think just about, I'm thinking now, every story we hear is a story we need to hear now, because for some reason people, it may be my imagination, Rich, but I feel like people have cut themselves off from the past in a way. There's no through line of realizing where we've come from in a way. And I don't know if it's, I don't know why it is. I don't know if, am I crazy in thinking that? Do you feel the same way?
No. It appears as if so much of the progress that we thought we had made as a nation, as a culture, has somehow been left behind, and we're starting over again.
It feels that way. And so I wanted to tell the story of this Auschwitz survivor because grief and sorrow needs a witness. And I just feel that humanity as a whole is just inches away from slipping into more tragic situations, like catastrophic situations, like we had in World War II, and people not treating others as equals, and destroying our basic freedoms. And it's so important to maintain what we've established as a country, and to remember all the battles that were fought to get us to this place where we are now. And it's been wonderful in a way since we did two of the story shows in Maine. We did Bangor and we did Portland. But since then, I think I've probably been to at least a dozen other cities, probably more, doing stories from the book. And I realized the element of the book, My Adventures with God, that resonates with different people is the same thing that One Day at a Time resonates with me. Even though this is my story of growing up in Texas and Oak Cliff and being in show business, a story that no one else really it's not really everyone's story. It becomes everyone's story because it's a true story. And it's part of, and the number of people that I've done stories for who said, like, that is how I grew up. That is my story. And I feel like it's a time in history to know where we are. We have to know where we came from. And I think we're at a dangerous point now where I'm feeling we're at a tipping point where people don't really know the battles that have been fought to bring us to the high, high place we've reached. That's just my take on it.
I think you're absolutely right. And Stephen, I have to tell you, not a week has gone by since you and Ann were here that I haven't had somebody come up to me and say, that was such an incredible night when Stephen was here reading. We loved it, and we're still talking about it here. It was so wonderful to have you here with us in town, and as always, a delight for us to have you back on the show talking about this terrific season 2 of One Day at a Time.
Yep, thank you, and thank you for letting me come on it. You know, Ann and I, we love Maine so much, and when we left Bangor, Annie and I were saying, on our next flight, she looked at me and she said, you know, we could live there. And then we've been watching the Weather Channel lately. And she said, you know, I'm not sure if we could live there.
It's a nice place to visit.
I am so happy to, it's funny that I've now been to Maine about 5 times and it's so stunningly gorgeous. And I happen to come always at just the right time.
Stephen Tobolowsky on season 2 of the Netflix series One Day at a Time, still produced by Norman Lear at 95 years old. Check it out if you haven't already. You're going to love it. Thanks to everybody on the program this morning. Stephen Tobolowsky, Ty Burr, and Bob Soucy previewing the Super Bowl. Carrie, enjoy your Super Bowl festivities tonight.
I think it will be a fun time regardless of the outcome of the game. It always seems to be.
Absolutely. It is. It's one of those days. Why tomorrow's not a holiday? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Well, actually, it is a holiday around here because we officially kick off tomorrow Z62 Retro Radio. Now, we've been doing the retro weekends for quite some time, but tomorrow, the best music of the 60s and 70s all day long. I'll be on the air at 2 o'clock playing all the hits for you wherever you may be, and then downtown at 4. Super Bowl talk from Minnesota, Chad Finn of the Boston Globe, Mike Lowe, who's not in Minnesota, hanging out on his couch, but we'll have some thoughts on the game as well. Alan Adams with movie reviews, Nick Durba, Maine baseball coach, and all week long to kick off the new format, Retro Rocker Conversations. Tomorrow, it's Gary Puckett of Gary Puckett and the Union Gap. All tomorrow afternoon at 4. Hope you'll join us right here on Z62 Retro Radio. Stick around. Casey Kasem, American Top 40, coming up next. You're gonna be a-